You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 7 August. U.S. tariffs started half an hour ago. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Pooja Tanna from Perpetua Investment Managers. There's tariffs alive. I'm interested in finding out global inflation rates, particularly the U.S. 10-year, which is currently down around 4.2, and that's a bit head-scratcher. Petri Raidenhaes, AMD results. Market didn't like it. How do they stack up compared to NVIDIA? There is massive chip demand. Waldo Marcus from TPN, rental escalation. Regulations running ahead of inflation, yet tenants continue to prioritize paying their rent. And are we seeing people starting to buy rather than rent? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, 17% of South Africa's electricity consumed by a few giant consumers, among them South32. Its 2025 discount could subsidize power for nearly 700,000 households. Business Day, border delays stall poultry imports as Brazil trade resumes. SA continues to rely on slower paper-based system, waits up to 10 days. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.75%, NASDAQ 1.33% higher. The East is mixed, Sydney down 0.1%, Tokyo up 0.8%, Hong Kong up 0.4%, and Tencent off 0.4%. Commodities are mixed, gold futures green, 3,340. Brent is red, 67.48. Platinum is green, 1,346, and palladium continues to slide, 1,162. Rand, 1,778. Bitcoin, 114,600. Top 40 opening call, 250 points, or 0.25% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Pooja Tanna. She's head of fixed income at Perpetua Investment Managers. Pooja, appreciate the early morning time. All the talk around tariffs has been individual stocks and companies that are going to be impacted. We've talked a lot around that. I want to talk sort of more the bigger picture. Next, start with offshore. Tariffs, and as I said, they've just kicked in. The US has been talking up. They're making tens of billions of dollars in tariff revenue. This must ultimately in the immediate, it must surely be a threat to inflation, therefore to interest rates. And my bigger concern is treasury yields, and particularly the US 10-year. What are your thoughts here?
Morning, Simon. Very pertinent questions. When we think about tariffs, three questions actually come to mind. Mm. Trump claims that America's winning. Is America really winning? Who is paying for tariffs ultimately? Mm-hmm. And what does it mean for the rest of the world? So the factual answer to is America really winning is that the near-term effects is indeed slower growth, a threat to near-term inflation, mm-hmm. and a cooling labor market. Incidentally, these are all three gauges that the Fed look at when it comes to deciding on interest rates. So, and that's why they've been pausing, because they're worried about the near-term threats to inflation. The second question is, who is going to pay for these tariffs? Now, Trump keeps saying that it's going to be the countries that are exporting to the U.S. When in actual fact, the costs will be borne partly by exporters, mm-hmm. partly by importers, but actually households. The estimated amount is $2,400. It's going to cost $2,400 per average household this year alone.
Wow.
With these current tariffs. And the reason for that is, just to give you some context, the average tariff rate is estimated to be 18.3%. Yo. It's up from 2.5%. That's the highest we've seen since 1935. So it is absolutely going to affect inflation. And Trump is saying that, and it's also going to affect the deficit. So if you look at the average income from tariffs, it's $2 trillion over 2026 to 2035. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure the big, beautiful bill has also been passed. Mm-hmm. And that's actually going to incur $2.4 trillion in debt. That's the huge problem for the fiscus. So what does it mean for the rest of the world? What it actually means is an erosion of trust with the U.S., yeah. resulting in a shift of flows out of U.S. assets. This is what we call the de-dollarization theme, and it brings into question the safe haven status of U.S. assets, primarily the dollar and treasury. So now you're just saying, you're scratching your head. Why is the 10-year treasury sitting at 4.2%?
Because
the market's worried about the fiscus. You've got the debt to GDP sitting at 124% with the big beautiful bill. And remember, now we've just said the tariffs are not going to offset that. It's forecasted to get to 134% by 2034. What this means is that the US is currently spending north of $1.1 trillion to service its debt. It's double what it was 5 years ago. And that's projected to go to $1.8 trillion by 2035. What it actually means is that the Fed is spending 18% of all tax revenue collected to service this national debt.
Yeah.
The markets are highly worried about this because in order to raise money for this debt, we need to issue, the Fed needs to issue in the back end of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And that warrants a higher term premium. What I mean by a higher term premium, it's the spread between the longer end of the curve and the shorter end of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the last decade, that term premium has been in negative territory and it's currently trading around 1.5% with US Treasuries at 4.2%. But actually, if you take a step back, go back 30 years,
mm-hmm.
that term premium has actually been an averaging between 2 and 4%, actually averaging 3%. And that's actually been the norm. We think the norm for U.S. Treasuries currently is like 2.5%, but the norm has actually been between 5% and 6%. And I actually think we're going back to the norm because you know what? We've got the debt to GDP problem.
Yeah.
We've got the de-dollarization thing. So flows are moving away from the U.S. The demand is diminishing. Supply is not. And that immediately means that that back end is going to stay elevated. And I believe that term premium needs to move up. So we're currently sitting at 1.5%. It could go north of 2%. That implies U.S. Treasuries north of 5%. That's not improbable. Look at the fiscus, the debt. There's loads to be worried about in the U.S. And Trump is certainly not helping with his tariffs because it's eroding trust and eroding the move away. I mean, it's pushing flows away from the U.S.
And I mean, you make the point there. I mean, you know, earlier in the year we got to 4.5%, and Trump blinked. This was back in April. I mean, a 5% 10-year, and to be clear, I mean, you know, our 10 years are double that, but we're a whole different kettle of fish. I mean, that is a massive implication for the U.S. economy.
No, absolutely. It's the right. The U.S. cannot get away with insane levels of debt.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The problem is, you know, this is the problem we've been facing. We have given the US way too much power
mm-hmm.
in the past. We hold dollar reserves. We hold US treasuries as part of our foreign reserves. Everything has been dollar based and we're actually realizing that that's a problem. And what you'll see, like China, for instance, have stopped purchasing US treasuries. They're reducing their holdings. Japan the same.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look at the graphs, Japan, China have come off. Asia's coming off. Europe, just by default, because the others are coming off, just by default are going up. So you can see the shift of flows and movements as well.
Yeah, and of course, we see that as well in the fact that we're seeing central bankers also buying gold now for the first time in a very, very long time. We'll leave it there. Let's put your Tanner, Petra Investment Managers, appreciate the early morning. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Petri Raden, hey, Serenia Capital Advisors. Petri, you're a chap who's bought some probably overpriced gaming cards in your life. Certainly, I know I have. And I've been scratching my head. We all know the NVIDIA story. We all know how it's been absolutely on a tear in terms of price appreciation, in terms of sales. And then we turn to AMD, and they're lagging. They're almost out of the picture. Although I notice, I mean, forward PE is about the same. I mean, is the market missing a trick here? Because this country, this planet needs chips, whether they be the fancy data centers or those that go in vehicles. Is there something that the market's getting wrong, perhaps, with AMD?
I think, morning, Sai. So I think that the market's maybe overreacting a little mm-hmm. bit to AMD. So the results came out, the stock dropped 6%, right? I think that's maybe a bit insane. Well, I think the entire pricing of the sector is frankly insane.
Sure, sure, sure.
But you are right. I mean, the world is moving in a direction where we do need an ever-increasing amount of processing power, an ever-increasing amount of electricity. These two things go hand in hand. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm using AI almost daily, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To do stupid tasks like help me compose an email or compare two computers together because I've got to buy a new laptop or whatever it is, right? I mean, there's an endless array of things that it's actually tremendously useful for. So, yeah, a data center, AI processing power demand is going to grow exponentially, right? And I think that people are looking at these tech stocks and pricing that in. But then you have a situation where AMD puts out earnings. Expectation was for adjusted earnings per share was something like 49 cents per share. Mm-hmm. It came in at 48 cents per share, and the stock price tanks 6%. So that's a bit of a violent reaction for a 1 cent miss, right? I think one of the issues here is that there's a ban on to China, and that led to an operating loss of around $150 million. However, that ban was lifted, so the expectation is that they're going to sort of catch up, if you will, and they even put out forward guidance to say, you know, to say that that's kind of the expectation. The forward guidance is up quite a bit from what it was before, right? However, I mean, I think the forward guidance is, I'm not 100% sure what the forward guidance is now, but they did say, like, look, you know, they're anticipating this loss situation that they made from the ban to be kind of reversed because the ban's been reversed, right? To give you some other numbers, though, revenue was $7.6 billion, while expectation was $7.4 billion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they actually beat revenue. Slight miss on earnings per share, and then had this sort of operating loss situation where they took a $800 million impact on the sort of China ban, which had an operating loss of $155 million. But that will be essentially reversed. I mean, NVIDIA was not unaffected either. They took a $4.5 billion write-down as well on the back of it. So, if you ask me, I think it's a bit of a flash in the pan, if you will. I think it's a bit of probably a buying opportunity. And now, yes, I know these tech stocks are super overvalued, and I mean, they make no sense. And now, this is something that I've been very resistant to back as well. But the truth is, man, we kept saying this about Naspers, and it kept. And you go, oh, it's too expensive to buy here, and you look again, and it's double the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's done that over and over, year after year after year after year. And it just feels like these techs. At least these chip manufacturers are just doing the same. And from a from a gamer's perspective, if you will, mm-hmm. Yes, the NVIDIA GeForce cards are really good, but the AMD cards perform just as well, much cheaper.
Yeah.
The processors, for example, there's a preference to have AMD chipsets over Intel chipsets. So AMD have a very good product, and I think, you know, who's in the lead? It's like it's a race with three horses, right? And every now and then Intel will be in the front, and then NVIDIA will be in the front, and then AMD will be in the front. But at the end of the day, there's only three horses. So it's sort of hard to say which one is really going to be the long-term loser, because they're all going to win.
Yeah, and data centers are being built left, right, and center. 3-year returns, NVIDIA 846%, AMD 59%. I'm with you there. I think there must be some opportunity. The write-downs from China, but as you point out, those will potentially come back. And even if they don't, they are behind them. We'll leave it there. Pilcher Aidenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Waldo Marcus, Marketing Director at TPN. Waldo, appreciate the time today. Latest residential rental monitor report out. Perhaps the big number is 83% of tenants are in good standing, which is, I think, notable considering how tough it is to be a South African consumer right now.
Most definitely. And if you then even compare it to the last quarter of 2024, which we seen an uptick, showing that tenants remain committed to towards paying their rental on time and in full. And although the 83%, still like 17% of tenants have not met their full rental obligation, it's definitely improvement compared to what we've seen at the end of last year. And looking at up till 2021, it's really been a good improvement overall. If we start looking at specific rental value bands, like the 7 to 12 and 12 to 25, almost 90% of tenants have met their full rental obligation by the end of the month. So overall, it seems like consumers and especially tenants are bucking the trend considering high unemployment and we've not seen great GDP growth. Overall, it's been a good story, but there's, of course, nuances when we start looking deeper into certain rental value bands, certain provinces, where it's not a consistent story overall.
But it also does imply to me that tenants paying their rent quite high on their list of priorities. In other words, they're having to make decisions, I imagine, and one of them is we must pay the rent.
Yes, they have prioritized rental payments. And if you start looking at some of the other credit data on how people are paying their unsecured loans, their short-term loans, their credit cards, it's not following the same trend. Although we've seen interest rates come down, the priority remains ensuring that they have accommodation and that they are meeting those obligations. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. The one being that there is a high demand for good rental properties. And as we've seen with the General Household Survey, about 40% of South Africans are opting for rental properties, not owning it. And that's been an increase. So there's definitely demand for these kind of accommodations, while supply is not always kept up, especially in key nodal areas, for instance, in the Western Cape, certain parts of Johannesburg, where we've not seen the supply keeping up. Tenants are therefore ensuring that they make those payments rather than losing a great property, losing a great landlord that looks after the property.
You mentioned there that 40% number. Is this the flip side of that? Is that home ownership, therefore, even with lower rates, although to be clear, lower rates is relative, they're still very high. Even with those lower rates, we're not seeing a significant uptick in home ownership and people are still saying it's probably more financially advantageous to rent.
That's a very interesting statistic. Looking at the General Household Survey for 2024 that Stats SA published, where 40% is opting to rent. What's also interesting is that we've seen a decline in home ownership where they are still servicing a bond. That's decreased to 6.3%. So that leaves 44.5%, or roughly around there. We've got about 50% of consumers that own their property outright for, you know, they've either purchased cash or they inherited it or it was part of an estate. So there's a definite move away from, we don't want to incur this additional debt. And that speaks volumes about the uncertainty in the economy.
Yeah, absolutely. Rates are down, but rates are still at eye-watering levels. Did we see much rental growth during the first quarter of this year from the survey?
Yes, we have. We actually seen a considerable uptick from quarter four into quarter one. That's sitting at 4.5% growth. So we're saying year on year, rental has increased by 5.5% in the first quarter. If you look back at what we saw in the previous quarter, that was at 4.2%. It doesn't sound like a lot, but this is over a very large sample. The outliers is still the higher rental value bands, the 7 to 12,000. They're sitting at 5.12% rental growth. And then the 12,000 up, they're sitting at 5.7% rental growth. So we've really seen that the higher rental value bands have got a more aggressive application in terms of increases. And then the lowest rental value band, although it's still below national average, we're sitting at 4.4%. So overall, we're seeing rental increases coming through, but it does come off a slightly lower base considering that during 2020-21, there was in some rental value bands de-escalation.
Yeah.
So landlords sacrificed rental growth for ensuring that their tenants can pay and that their properties are occupied. So we're starting to see this, but it's considering what the CPI is currently, we've seen at this stage that rental growth is outpacing the inflation rate.
Yeah, absolutely. I had CPI early in the year, around 3, and some points a little under 3. Some of the data, so you're going back to 2013, looking at tenants and the number in the different bands, we're certainly seeing tenants move up the bands. I suspect that's more the value of the properties, perhaps, rather than a sort of everyone getting a little bit richer. This is just a good old-fashioned property costs more to rent from year to year.
It's the impact of property inflation overall, as more and more escalations are added to keep up with inflation, also showing some rent, improved rental returns coming out of a period where we've seen lower rental vacancies. Mm-hmm. Landlords are a bit more comfortable increasing their rental slightly above inflation, especially in well-maintained properties. And that is driving more and more tenants into higher rental value bands.
Yeah.
But the most notable is that luxury rental market above 25,000 Rand a month, that has tripled since 2013. So the appetite for larger properties, more established, is becoming more prominent. And then if we look back at the general household surveys of how many people are opting to rent versus buying property, that number is supporting that migration where people that could afford to purchase are still opting to rent.
Yeah, gotcha. We'll leave it there. Well done, Marcus, Marketing Director at TPN. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today. Talking there, it's certainly paying your rent is important. We make the sense of that. But the question I want to ask is, are you renting your home or are you owning your home? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. Yesterday, I was chatting with Duma Nkenge from Satrix, talking about investing and how sometimes the best move is doing nothing. He posed the question, what did we do in that April sell-off? Did you sell back in April? Over 80% said no, you held tight. Some 10% said, look, we were taking some profits. And then a small number said, yeah, did sell and do regret it. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb websites in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, redefining realistic retirement.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.